And we are on air this Monday night, July the 10th, and it's for our Atlanta NASCAR race review and hot topic sound off here at Fanpa Racing Radio. Sal will be joining us here in just a few minutes, and in the meantime, I'll give you our rundown of the agenda for tonight. We're going to start in the first half hour, of course, with our latest short track news, and then we'll review the Arkham and Art Series race that took place at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, and we'll include the ARCA East and ARCA West Series update. In the next half hour, we're going to review the NASCAR Truck Series race that took place at Mid-Ohio, and then the NASCAR Xfinity Series race that took place at Atlanta Motor Speedway. In our third half hour, we have a guest, Holly Clark, driver of the number 17 SRL Pro Late Model and Modified Series for Steve Clark Racing will join the conversation. And then we review the NASCAR Cup Series race that took place out at Atlanta Motor Speedway. We're going to end our episode with NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off in our fourth half hour, and definitely looking forward to talking with the Fanpa Racing crew there. Again, Sal Segala should be here shortly. I'll go ahead and get started with some short track news. I'll have to kind of be watching back and forth in the studio here to make sure that we catch Sal when he does arrive. But let me start. Eric Joan Pace's Slinger Nationals practice day. You can read about that. They had practice today for the Slinger Nationals that are coming up this week, and Eric Jones paced the field. So that was really good to see the NASCAR connection there. Let me see. Also, again, I'm kind of juggling back and forth between the studio and the news, watching for Sal. Also, the entry list is up for the NASCAR Cup Series Crayon 301 that will take place at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, so you can check that out over at Racing America. And 10th time's a charm for Tom Carey III out at Oxford Plains. He finally got that win, and you can read about his victory over, again, at Racing America. Also, Butch Miller's RSVPs to the ASA 50th Anniversary Racers Reunion. So Miller is a three-time Redbud 400 winner at Anderson Speedway and the only driver to win the grueling race three consecutive years. So, again, you can read about that at Racing America. Okay. Let me see. We've got maybe another couple we can get. Okay. There's some schedule changes following the rain-delayed mid-season championships at White Mountain. So weather's been playing havoc again at the East Coast. I know there's been a lot of flooding today, and a lot of these races are getting rescheduled. So watch for updates about that. Also, Five Star Race Car Bodies is the presenting sponsor of the Slinger Nationals broadcast. So that's pretty cool as well. All right, I'm going to move over here to Flow Racing. Let me see if Sal's on yet. Nope, he's still not here. Okay, so I'm going to go over to Flow Racing and see what I can do over here as far as the news. Tuesday night showdown at Davenport Speedway next for the Lucas Oil late models. So that Tuesday is tomorrow night that fans will want to be tuning in at Flow Racing to watch that race. It's a big one. It says how to watch the 2023 Dirt Duel at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. You can find out how you can make that happen over at Flow Racing as well. The NHMS Dirt Duels will be streamed live on Flow Racing. So they'll have a lot of those events over there. Also, the 2023 Eldora Million at Eldora Speedway, everything you need to know about that race is over at Flow Racing, so you'll want to check that out as well. Still no Sal, so I guess I'll move on here. How to watch the 2023 MLRA late models at Adams County Speedway. That's available over at Flow Racing as well. And Mother Nature, no match for Sunshine. Tyler Courtney at Sharon Speedway did her thing for the 15th annual Lou Blaney Memorial on Saturday evening. But it sounds like they did have to deal with some rain there as well. And Brady Bacon goes from Rutgers to Checkers with USAC Sprints at Macon, Illinois, a mere 24 hours after he and his car sat upside down in a crumpled heap following a meeting with the Turn 2 outside wall. Bacon returned to his form and was able to pull out that victory. So pretty exciting news there. Again, over at Flow Racing, they have quite a lot. And they have the results of the racing that took place just this past weekend. You'll want to check that out. That's under the results tab. And also they have the schedule that will tell you the races that are upcoming so that you can plan your schedule to see local dirt track racing or asphalt racing or any kind of racing at your local short tracks where you live. All right, still no Sal. He's really behind here. He must be stuck in traffic. I know that happens sometimes. He's coming straight from work to the Fan for Racing radio show. And I've not seen him yet, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be here. So we'll keep an eye out for Sal Segala. All right, I'm going to move over to Short Track Scene. So the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series, Brown and Huffman split at Hickory this past weekend. So there was a twin number one and twin number two. Each of them took a victory there. And then Ron Silk in the NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour bumps his way to Wall Stadium Tour win. So, again, that sounds like an interesting race to check out over at Short Track Scene. And in the Pro Late Models, a wild last lap nets Logan Jones, Wake County Cars, PLM win, Pro Late Model win. So you'll want to check that out as well. There's a lot over here at Short Track Scene. Todd Patnody foils Hirschman's bid in 10,000 racers honoring Racers 100. There's also the Southern Super Series. Jake Garcia survives to win the Southern Supers at Nashville. And Bobby McCarty declared the Sobo 200 winner. Quappel and Huffman were DQ'd. So more DQs in the short track world. You can read about that one over at Short Track Scene. And Casey Call conquers star for the second GSPSS win in Key Auto Group 100, the Granite State Pro Stock Series. So you'll want to check that out. Still waiting for Sal here. Carson Quappel claims the South Boston 200. Again, you can read about that over at Short Track Scene. Ty Majeski's intake cleared after an additional inspection. So that was ASA Stars Tour race. Apparently they had to, that was at the Milwaukee Mile, and they had to do an additional inspection. That's kind of late news, meaning that it's something that's been known for a while now. But I think I've given you the most recent news at the home page of Short Track Scene. And Sal is finally here, so let's bring him into the queue. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, hi, Sharon. Thanks.
Yeah, I've been back and forth checking to see when you were able to make it. It's good to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have any short track news from the SRL series?
No, other than we're racing this weekend at Stockton, over at Stockton. They'll be running the this will be the first time they ever run the modified, the SRL modified in Stockton. But we're running modified pro late models and then of course the super late models. So it's going to be interesting to see how these modifieds race over here. They've never raced there before, so everybody's looking forward to it, and it's going to be a going to be an exciting race. I'll tell you that.
Okay, and then you weren't here when I was going through our agenda, but Holly Clark, driver of the number 17 SRL Pro Late Model Series and Modified Series for Steve Clark Racing, is going to join us in our third half hour. Did you want to tell us anything about Holly?
Actually, she's on fire right now. She's had, I think, her last three finishes in the modifieds. She's finished second, and then she just come up. She's just coming off of a second place finish over here at Kern in our last pro late model race. But man, I'll tell you, she's really making a headway, and she's got a lot of people watching her right now. So it's going to be exciting to, you know, to ask her, you know, basically just talk, you know, racing with her.
And she is doing well in both of those series, right? The Pro Late Model series, SRL, as well as the Modified.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. She's doing really good in both of them. So she's doing double duty. And like I said, she's being a racer out there. So it's going to be exciting to see, you know, to see how she prevails this weekend on this little track. She's been out there before in the pro lane, so.
Okay.
We'll
have the first 15 minutes of our third half hour with her, and then afterward is when we are going to review the NASCAR Cup Series race at Atlanta Motor Speedway this past weekend. I've been through all of the three sites, Sal, Racing America, Flow Racing, and Short Track Scene. Was there anything that kind of got your attention that you want to make sure we talk about in any of those three sites?
Not really the three sites. Just if any of you have a if any of you are going to be by Flow Racing tomorrow, you definitely want to check out the Slinger Nationals.
Yes.
Yeah, as you notice, William Byron just added his name to the list on Sunday. So it's going to be an exciting time of racing. It's a big event, and Derek Thorne's out there, of course, this week. So it's going to be.
And I think it's going to be Derek Thorne's kind of pace the field during the practice today for the Slinger Nationals.
Yeah,
so that's pretty cool.
I think he was sitting fourth is where I didn't get a chance to really pay much attention. I've been really super busy at work, so I just got to really let me see where he's at. Derek right now is sitting second, actually. Yeah, he's sitting second in practice. William Solich, Derek Thorne, Gio Ruggiero, Connor Jones, Luke Fenhouse, Derek Krause, Ty Majeski, William Byron eighth, Austin Mason ninth, and Levon DeGest rounded out the top ten. And then
looking at it, the one that I'm looking at. Are you looking at the one at Racing America?
No, I'm looking at the one on Racing on Race Monitor.
Oh, okay, because the practice results that I saw was Eric Jones in first, Luke Fenhouse in second, Guy Majeski in third, William Byron fourth, Jeremy Lepak in fifth, Don DeAngelis sixth, Chase Elliott seventh, Austin Nason is eighth, William Sawalich ninth, and Derek Thorne in tenth to round out the top ten. So I'm looking over at Racing America.
Okay, yeah, you got to remember they run a couple of practices. So probably the practice that I'm looking at might have been from the second.
No, this was during the final round.
Might have been from the first.
Yeah,
okay,
might have been.
Okay, all right, then I'm looking at the first practice, yeah, from the first.
Okay, this was the last practice, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're looking at two different practice times here. All right, we are going to have to move over to the Arkham Menards series because and I sent you some info over on the team's site, Sal. We've got some notes here for the Arkham Menards series. Post the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course Zinsser 150. And I'll go ahead and get started. The NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series regular and 2018 Arkham Menards Series East champion, Tyler Ankrum, led the final five laps to score the victory in the Arkham Menards Series Zinsser 150 at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Ankrum led twice for a total of 21 laps, but he was forced to charge through the field after being forced off the course in turn one while battling for the lead on the restart following the midweek race. So it was a pretty eventful race, but Tyler Ankrum actually prevailed to get that victory.
Yeah, it was, to say the least, it wasn't a very pretty race from the get-go all the way to the end. There was a lot of, it wasn't a very pretty race. So, I mean, it's just sad to see what where the series has gone, you know, and the way people are racing it. But either way, congratulations to Tyler Ankrum, man. He really had to work his way back a couple of times to get the lead and finally get the win, which he was a class of the field to begin with anyways. When the race, when the green flag dropped, he was fast.
Yeah, he was the 354th different driver to win at least one Arkham Menards Series race. And then the current Arkham Menards Series East Championship leader, William Sawalich, finished second, 5.011 seconds behind Ankrum at the line. Sawalich is now finished in the top 10 in each of his last three starts. He won at Berlin Raceway and was second last weekend out at Elko Speedway.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he's been on fire this year. You know, he's been doing really well in the series, you know, as far as his finishes and everything like that. So, I mean, he's really been a threat.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to see if we can get him on the show. Jack Wood scored his best career Arkham Menards Series finish in third place. It marks his second top five finish of the season with his fifth top 10 finish in six Arkham Menards Series starts this year. So that's a good feat for Jack Wood.
Oh, yeah. Jack was, he was another one that was, he's another one that had an up and down, that had an up and down day at the track.
Okay. So it ended out well. So Jesse Love, he was forced to start at the back of the field. He had some electrical issues that caused him to miss qualifying. He quickly charged from 19th starting spot to the runner-up position and then moved into the lead on the restart following the mid-race break. He led eight laps before dropping to fourth with now a fuel pressure issue over the final handful of laps. So a little misfortune there for Jesse Love.
Yeah. He was another one that was up and down, up and down, up and down. It seemed like all the drivers were up and down. I mean, no driver really just took, you know, just really took the, you know, the race by the horns.
Okay, and then there was Frankie Muniz. He returned to the site of his open-wheel career-ending crash and matched his career-best ARCA Menards Series finish in sixth place. Muniz remains second in the ARCA Menards Series championship standings. He's now 43 points behind leader Jesse Love.
Yeah, and for those of you that didn't watch the race, Frankie came on afterwards during his press conference and said that there's a good chance he won't make the race at Iowa because of a sponsorship.
Oh, that's so sad to hear.
I hope something comes through for him. But, yeah, he made the announcement. He goes, there's a chance that I won't be at Iowa. He says, because of sponsorship. You know, it's funny. People think, you know, because he's Frankie Muniz, he's a movie star, he has all this money, but they also got to remember that he also has a family to support. You know, they don't take money out of their personal account, you know, to go race.
Right.
That's why they get sponsors, you know,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, for all this. And it's just sad, you know, the way some of the people, you know, look back at, you know, and think like that. But so, you know, we wish the best for Frankie.
Let's hope that sponsorship comes through there. And then the ARCA Menards Series West Championship contender Todd Souza made the long haul from Central California to race at Mid-Ohio, and he was rewarded with a seventh-place finish. Souza fought brake issues throughout the day, but he was able to stay on course and avoid the late race incidents in front of him to gain several positions over the last five laps.
Yeah, that was good for Todd to come, you know, to make the trip, because usually Todd just only races in the West. He has something like 114 starts in the ARCA Menards West Series, so that's a lot of starts.
Okay, Zach Karen scored his best career ARCA Menards Series, finished in ninth place. He finished 33rd at Daytona in his only other start this season.
Yeah, that was another good finish. Another rookie. Gosh, there was a lot. When you look at the field, there was a lot of rookies in the field this race.
Yes, there are. Now we're going to get to talk about the one that you wanted to talk about. So, Connor Jones finished eighth, while the other two Venturini Motorsports drivers, Dean Thompson and Sean Hingorani, collided on the final lap, leaving Thompson 10th and Hingorani, who won the general title pull award, with a new track record in qualifying. He ended up in 13th place.
Yeah, that could have been avoided all in all, but either way it wasn't. You know what, I talked to Sean and he felt it, you know. Dean had it coming to him. Dean did push him off the track earlier in the race, but, you know, either way, you know, their teammates, I kind of think that Dean should have shown him a little bit more respect out there because of the fact that Dean was just a one-off race. And Sean and Jesse Love, his other teammate, which Dean also put into the dirt, you know, Dean should have been a little bit more respectful towards his teammates since they're both ready for championships, you know, and Dean's just out there, you know, to kind of get his feet wet, you know, because he had the truck race
uh-huh.
the following day. But either way, they announced it.
When you're racing against other drivers that are racing for points and somebody else is racing for that win. I watched the video several times, Sal, and when I look at the video, it seems to me that they were both at fault. I'm surprised they only penalized Hingorani. I think they should have penalized Thompson as well, because I think I figured there was something going on earlier in the race. These two have been back and forth before. This isn't the first time. But Thompson, I thought Thompson went into Hingorani first, and Hingorani, you know, pushed back. But they were both at fault there from what I could see.
Yeah, and actually they ended up suspending. They made an announcement today. They're suspending Hingorani for one race because of the incident. And I don't agree with ARCA because ARCA, if you're gonna penalize a driver, you know, you have to be consistent. You haven't penalized no one all season, and at the beginning of the year, Todd Souza just about killed Tanner Reif at Phoenix when he got into him, when he hooked him and pushed him into the wall at Phoenix going 150 miles an hour. And Arca just turned their back on it and let it go. And that's a lot more dangerous than when these guys are going 50, 60 miles around a corner.
And that
where
was
two
drivers now. Who were the two drivers?
It was at the beginning of the season. It was Todd Souza and Tanner Reif.
Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't ask where. I was asking who.
It was Todd Souza and Tanner Reif.
Okay. I just think Thompson should have been penalized too in this case. But you're right; they should be consistent.
I mean, it made for good reaction on social media. You know, if that's what they're looking for, you know, they did get a lot of bad, of course. You know, nothing good ever comes out of nothing like this, anyway. You know, the fans are Joe Schmidt today. He's Ingarani's enemy, and then tomorrow he's Ingarani's best friend, but. Either way.
Yeah. Okay, well, the next race for the ARCA Menards Series is the Calypso Lemonade 150 at Iowa Speedway. That will be on Saturday, July the 15th. Sean Ingarani will not be there. The race, he will not be on the track, let me put it that way. The race is a combination race that will also award championship points for the ARCA Menards Series East, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 2, starting at 8 p.m. So you've got two series, one race, and points for both of those series. The ARCA Menards Series West, their next race is the Shasta 150. That'll be July 29th at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Shasta Speedway, and it will be on Flow Racing. I was just reading something there about that particular
Yeah, Tyler Reif will be racing with Todd Souza in that race. He's not with Loudon Jackson anymore. Yeah, he's not with Loudon Jackson. I started talking to Matt, and then I looked and we had to get on the phone, or I would have more information on that, because Matt's one of the team members from Loudon Jackson. But I didn't get a chance to really get into it too much. But it was kind of obvious when Tyler Reif's mom is hanging around Todd Souza all day at Irwindale, you know, you kind of knew something was brewing.
Something was coming.
But either way, you know what? I guess at this level, they make team changes too. You know, it's kind of strange because you never hear of it.
Yep. So we'll have to see how that works out. I'm glad that he found another ride with Todd Souza and that they'll both be in that race. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch. Okay, we are at the top of the hour. We're going to start with the NASCAR Truck Series because they were racing out at Mid-Ohio as well. And they had, their race was the O'Reilly Auto Parts 150. The race winner was Corey Heim at the age of 21, driving the number 11 Safe Light Toyota for Tricon Garage. The crew chief is Scott Zippidelli. It was his fourth victory in 32 Craftsman Truck Series races, his second victory in 11th top 10 finish this season, and his first victory and first top 10 finish in two races at Mid-Ohio. Zane Smith finished second, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Mid-Ohio, and it is his seventh top 10 finish of this season. Christian Eckes finished third, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Mid-Ohio, and Nick Sanchez, who finished ninth, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Just to give a rundown here, Corey Heim triumphed in a wild truck series race at Mid-Ohio He actually started on the pole and finished with his second victory of the year at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. The win, again, was the second of the season and the fourth Truck Series win of his career. Smith started from the rear of the field and ended up finishing runner-up. Again, Eckes was third. Then it was Stuart Friesen, Ben Rhodes rounding out the top five, followed by Matt Crafton, Ty Majeski, Matt DiBenedetto, Nick Sanchez in ninth, and Tyler Ankrum made up the top 10. Tyler said he raced that ARCA race to help him in this truck race, so he came home with a top 10 finish as a result of that. Ben Rhodes won the first stage, then it was Ty Majeski who won the second stage. There were six lead changes among four drivers and 10 cautions for 23 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 54.441 miles per hour. Sal, your thoughts about the top 10 finishers here?
Yeah, congrats to Corey Hive, you know, for coming out, and running this race, and getting the win, from a driver like, from Zane Smith, because Zane is a good all-around driver. He's good on road courses. He's good on ovals too, big congrats to Christian Eckes. I was talking to Bill McAnally on last Saturday at the track, and since Christian's already in the chase, he said they're putting all their tools into Jake Garcia to try and get Jake hopefully into the chase. And I see that Jake here finished 16th, Christian Eckes, with a third place finish, at least he has one, at least Bill has one driver
in the playoffs.
Cause they have two more races to decide it, I think.
Yep. They're down to the last two races.
They're down to the last two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Nick Sanchez getting that ninth, the highest finishing rookie. Sorry, Haley Deegan. You guys can rip on him and they still haven't stopped about Nick Sanchez. But he's doing something that you're obviously not doing. So sad. Sad. That's a sad situation right there with the Deegans and the way they're treating Sanchez. But either way, it's sad. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, let it go. It's over with. It's been already three races. But
yeah,
there's just so much going on with this truck series. Afterwards, you start listening to all the driver interviews, the ones that they don't televise that they show on that come out on Twitter, and some of these drivers that aren't even close to making the chase, that haven't even, maybe they had a one top five in their whole life, and they're complaining about the series, and it's funny, but I mean, these guys race hard, and it's racing, but congrats against the Corey Heim and Zane Smith. Christian Eckes in the top three. Good to see Stuart Friesen finally grab a top five too.
Okay, 67 laps.
Go ahead.
I've got to move on here, Sal. There were 67 laps. 27 drivers completed all 67 laps. There were a total of 32 drivers that finished the race, but they finished one or more laps down. A couple of drivers had some issues. Colby Howard had a transmission issue, taking him out of the race on lap 21. Dale Quarterly had an overheating issue. He was only able to complete 35 laps. And then Will Rogers was involved in an accident, taking him out on lap 54. And Dean Thompson had an accident that took him out of the race on lap 59. So those were the drivers that did not finish the race. The margin of victory between first and second was 0.947 thousandths of a second. So it was a close finish.
Yeah, it was, and it was a good one. So,
It was a good one.
The fans that were there definitely got their money's worth.
And there's going to be a replay of the race on the Fox Sports app. If anybody wants to watch that, I think they've been replaying the race. I've got to look at that again. I might be thinking of the ARCA race. I know the ARCA race has got a replay that's going to be happening on the 12th. So if you've got the Fox Sports app, look for those replays of these races because they do them on that app. Okay. Anything else that you wanted to mention about the race here?
No, that's really basically about it. You know what? Boy, that sand really made for some exciting racing.
That sand?
That little sand pit right there, yeah. I felt kind of bad for Lawless Allen. He got into it. If he'd have gone straight, he would have gotten out. And all of a sudden, I don't know why he made a right turn. He made the right turn, and he got stuck. But if he would have just kept going the way he was going, he would have pulled out of it. It would have been, a pretty sweet little move there. But then I still don't know why
he made that
right turn.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and go over the points report then.
Yeah, I had to go to NASCAR.com because JC doesn't have the points.
Oh, well, that's
so
too bad.
I know. I thought the same thing. So, anyways, driver standings right now, it looks like Corey Heim is leading the points. 26 points behind him is Zane Smith. In third,
Ty Majeski.
You know what? This thing is.
Yeah, they do have it over at Jayski Sal. If you go to the race page and click on the points, driver points, that's what I'm looking at.
Okay, trucks.
Go to the race page for Mid-Ohio.
Oh, here it is right here. Okay. Here we go. Okay, Corey Heim, Zay Smith, second. Ty Majeski, third. Ben Rhodes, fourth. Grant Enfinger is at fifth. Christian Eckes is at sixth. Seventh, we got Carson Hocevar. Eighth is Matt Benedetto. Ninth is Dick Sanchez. And Matt Crafton is holding up that 10th spot. So there is a one-point difference between Matt Crafton and Stuart Friesen right now for that last spot.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
And if Jake Garcia wants to make it in, Jake is 85 points back, which to make up 85 points, basically he has to win.
Uh-huh.
He's going to win. Yeah, he's going to win situation. There's no way he'll do it on points. So. One of the big stories today too was Taylor Gray finally with three starts less than Haley Deegan, he's finally up on top around points by 7 points. So for the team that was one of the big one of their big stories here was that Taylor doesn't let his old teammate finish higher than him in the points. So.
Mm-hmm.
Just
little
added curriculum.
That's okay. Highest playoff points is Corey Heim with the 2 race wins and 5 stage wins. That's going to help him in the postseason. Then you've got the second highest is Christian Eckes. He's got the 2 wins and 4 stage points, giving him 14 playoff points. And then 2 drivers are tied at 12 with Zane Smith, 2 race wins, 2 stage wins, and then also Carson Hocevar exactly the same, 2 wins, 2 stage wins at 12 points. One other driver over 10 is Grant Enfinger. He's got the 2 race wins and 1 stage win, giving him 11. These playoff points are going to make a big difference, I think, in the playoffs. So.
Oh, yeah, they're going to make a huge difference. You know what, and it's going to be neat to see, how it all plays out. At the end. We've already seen it before. How important it is to have those points.
Well, we've seen it where it's been tied, and race wins is kind of the best playoff result is kind of what breaks the tie. But one point can make a huge difference. A couple of news stories that I'm looking at on the Truck Series page. Marco Andretti is not ruling out a full-time move to NASCAR. His Truck Series debut got off to a great start at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course when he qualified 7th in the Spire Motorsports number 7. So apparently he enjoyed that race.
Yeah, I'd read about that, about an Andretti, possibly coming to NASCAR. Everybody knows how he's doing in IndyCar. He hasn't won one yet, so might as well come over here and give it a shot over here. His cousin came over here and did John Andretti, RIP, bless his heart, everybody still remembers him. But, John Andretti, he kind of broke the Andretti mold, and came over to the NASCAR series instead of running, open wheel like the rest of his family. Of course, everybody knows the history behind Mario Andretti, and the little success he had over here in NASCAR. So, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea. He's a little bit old, but, he's got the money. He's got the resources.
The money and the desire.
The desire and the resources. So you might as well come on over and try and catch a raceman, before you retire.
Okay. Well, a couple of other drivers who were racing at Mid-Ohio include Landon Lewis from the ARCA Menards Series. He made his debut with Roper Racing at Mid-Ohio this week. And then also Will Rogers. We used to have Will on the show here and there. And he was with Young's Motorsports at Mid-Ohio this past weekend in the Truck Series.
Yeah, he's made a lot of he'll come out for all the road courses because that's his specialty is road courses.
Yeah.
So Will usually always come out, for all the road course races, he had an accident this
week, so he didn't finish as well as he wanted to. He ended up finishing in 34th place. And then Landon Lewis from the ARCA Menards Series, he had a 24th place finish.
Yeah, that was a good finish for Landon. I was really excited for him, to be able to grab that finish.
And Marco Andretti, as we mentioned, was also in this race. He ended up with a 19th place finish. Okay, let's move on to the Xfinity Series then, as I pull up my notes here. Xfinity Series. All right. This race was at Atlanta Motor Speedway, the ASCO Uniforms 250. The race winner was John Hunter Nemechek, age 26, driving the number 20 Mobile One Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. His crew chief was Ben Beshore. It was his fifth victory in 84 Xfinity Series races, his third victory and 14th top 10 finish this year, in his first victory and third top 10 finish in four races at Atlanta. Daniel Hamrick finished second. He posted his sixth top 10 finish in 9 races at Atlanta, and it's his 9th top 10 finish this season. Cole Custer finished third, posting his 3rd top 10 finish in 5 races at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Sammy Smith, who finished 10th, was the highest finishing rookie of this race. And I'm going to go to the race page here for the ALSCO uniforms and to do the race rundown. John Hunter Nemechek took advantage of an overtime restart to win the Xfinity Series race at Atlanta. He grabbed the lead in that overtime restart and went six laps past its posted distance. John Hunter Nemechek streaked to his 3rd Xfinity Series victory of the season. It's the only time this season, the only time Nemechek led during that overtime was during the overtime after a push from Daniel Hamrick powered him into the lead on that final restart. Despite having an ill-handling race car, Nemechek won that Xfinity Series race for his 3rd win of the season, which increases the regular season championship lead to 16 points. Hamrick finished 2nd, tying his best finish of the 2023 season. Cole Custer picked up his 11th consecutive top 10 finish. Justin Haley, who led a race high 80 laps, was in control of the race until that late caution came out. He ended up finishing in 4th. Sam Mayer runs out the top 5. Then it was Ty Gibbs, Kyle Sieg for the best finish of his career in 7th. Parker Kligerman, Josh Williams, and Sammy Smith round out the top 10. Riley Earps won the opening stage, which was the first stage victory of his career. Sheldon Creed claimed the 2nd stage victory, and both drivers were involved in a wreck on lap 89. There were 14 lead changes among 9 drivers and 8 cautions for 50 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 108.029 miles per hour. Your thoughts about that top 10?
Yeah, I didn't get it. Once again, I didn't get a chance to see the race. I was at Irwindale because we had our weekly program this week. But I did catch the end on the John Hunter Nemechek winning the race. And I guess they said that was one of the best burnouts they'd ever seen by a driver. You know, it's pretty spectacular and pretty entertaining. But congratulations to John Hunter Nemechek on the win. Daniel Hamrick, you know, pick up the 2nd. Cole Custer continues, to hopefully get into some type of championship form this year, you know, and with that third place finish. Other than that, Ty Gibbs, who came out from Cup, to race this race, probably to get some, a little bit of a little bit more seat time on the track. And then Sammy Smith finishing 10th is the highest finishing rookie of the race.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to see that. There were 28 cars who finished the race. Brendan Poole was the only driver who finished a couple of laps down. Several other drivers did have the incidents, taking them out of the race early. Greg Van Alts was out on lap 62 due to an accident. Ryan Sieg out on lap 87 because of an accident. Riley Earps, Sheldon Creed were both out on lap 88 because of the accident we mentioned there. Anthony Alfredo and Brandon Jones both had damaged vehicle policy problems that took them out on lap 90 for Alfredo and lap 91 for Brandon Jones. Blaine Perkins had an accident on lap 96, taking him out of the race. And Kyle Weatherman had an accident that took him out of the race on lap 97. Mason Maggio had an electrical issue, taking him out of the race in lap 102. And Akinori Ogata had a transmission issue that took him out of the race on lap 103. So quite a few drivers were not able to finish this race.
Yeah, then actually the end of the race, Austin Hill had some words for RCR Racing. You know, he thinks, you know, they're out to get him. You know, he only had a...
Doesn't he race for RCR?
12. Huh?
Austin Hill races for RCR.
I know. I don't know why he thinks his teammates... He said he made a mention about something about it, about RCR Racing and... Or the way people are racing him or something to that effect. I didn't quite hear the whole interview, but I know he was pretty upset with some stuff. I should have listened. I know he's an RCR. I should have listened a little bit more and listened more to the interview. That was another interview that was on Twitter. But the guys on Twitter, they'll get an interview. Yeah, they'll get an interview, and then they won't finish the whole thing. They'll just get a bit of it, like, oh, yeah, John Smith hit me into the wall, and that's it. And
mm-hmm.
like, okay, so what transpired from it? You know what? They don't record the whole interview, but.
Yeah, that's okay. I know it's
Twitter.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and cover the points report, Sal.
All right, and then the points are, there are driver points right here. John Hunter Nemechek still leading the points with three race wins. Picked up his third to tie Austin Hill for the most wins this season. Austin Hill sitting second with three race wins. Cole Custer sitting in third with two race wins. And then we go down to Justin Allgaier with one race win. Chandler Smith himself, he has one race win. And then Josh Berry rounds off the top six with zero race wins. And then from there, then we go to Sam Mayer sitting in seventh, Daniel Hemric in eighth, Sammy Smith in ninth with one race win, Sheldon Cree in tenth, Riley Herbst 11th, and Parker Klingerman round out the top 12 with Jeb Burton has his one race win, sitting 13th. So basically, that put Parker Klingerman on the bubble with Brett Moffitt sitting right behind him.
Exactly. And if you don't think stage wins make a big difference, take a look at the difference between John Hunter Nemechek and Austin Hill. One playoff point difference, and the only difference is that they both have the three race wins, but John Hunter Nemechek has one more stage win at four than Austin Hill, who has only three stage wins. That's the difference between first and second place.
Yeah, Cole Custer actually sitting with five stage wins and 15 playoff points. So
he's got two wins, too.
Yeah, with two wins. So those three are probably going to go all the way to the big three, and then whoever's going to be the fourth driver in for the unless two other drivers get race wins during the playoffs, you don't bump them out. But as far as the first round goes, you know, they're going to have to have three new winners to knock John Hunter Nemechek, Austin Hill, and Cole Custer out.
Yep. It's going to be an interesting playoff for sure. They've got a few more races left before their playoffs begin. But it's still getting down to the wire. Some of the news here in the Xfinity Series, Al, MBM Motorsports withdrew from the Xfinity Series race at Atlanta. They announced Friday that it withdrew their 66th entry from Saturday's Xfinity race. It'll be the first time since 2015 that team owner Carl Long has not entered a car in the Xfinity race. They credited their decision to withdraw based on not having simulator time, and with no practice, the team wouldn't know the speed it has until qualifying. Should qualifying get canceled due to weather, which it has in the last three Atlanta races, the 66 team would be the team not competing as it sits 44th in the owner standings. The number 66 car has qualified into six races this season with Timmy Hill, earning the team its best finish of 30th at Dover Motor Speedway. Chad Fincham, who is slated to drive the 66 car this weekend, will now drive it at New Hampshire Motor Speedway next weekend. So it's hard for some of these smaller teams that aren't sure if they're going to be in the race having to make tough decisions to not go in order to save money for another race down the road.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, to make that decision, you know, you have to, because of the money involved, you know, you really have no choice.
Yep.
You know,
really...
I mean, you can't be throwing money away. You know, it's
and that's
yeah,
just
you,
it.
You
they
can't be...
watch every penny.
Oh yeah, you can't be throwing your money away. You know, especially you know if you're not in the playoffs, you know, and you're out there, you know, you're out there running.
Yep. Now, you remember last year, a lot of drivers were having trouble getting onto pit road. So NASCAR made some changes to the pit road speed limit and also the DVP policy, the damaged vehicle policy. During green flag pit stop, sections 1 and 2 of pit road will be limited to 90 miles an hour, while sections 3 through 18 were policed at 45 miles per hour. Under caution flag conditions, pit road speed is 45 miles per hour for the full distance of pit road, starting with the white commitment line in turn 3 to the pit road exit at turn 1. They also added one minute, for each of the series on the damaged vehicle policy. Do you have any thoughts about any of that?
You know what? I mean, they felt they had to do something, you know. I mean,
yeah, I guess.
You know, for whatever, you know, at least they explained it, you know, you know, I mean, the drivers coming in, you know what, they play off of those sections anyways, more in the Cup than they do in Xfinity. You know, more in the Cup than Xfinity, you know. You know, so, you know, I mean, the pit's clear. I don't know why you can't speed it up a little bit. You know what, it's like they said, you know, the extended length of the pit road, you know, it's 45, you know,
mm-hmm.
and cars were falling down, you know, because of how fast the track is. Now, I know what they try to do is the pit road speed, you know, to where, you know, you come on and off and hopefully get a pit stop, you know, off, you know, without falling too far behind. You know, they try to find that ratio, you
mm-hmm.
know, so I mean, you know, and it's a tough. It's a slippery slope, you know.
Yeah, and real quick before we run out of time, I just want to mention that Dale Earnhardt Jr. is making his second Xfinity Series start of this season, and that'll be at Homestead. So pretty cool that we'll be able to see Dale Earnhardt Jr. back in the car at Homestead this coming week, or not coming week.
Oh, yeah.
And Sal,
so,
your guest is here. If you want to go ahead and bring her into the queue and conduct the interview, you can bring me in at the end to kind of close it out.
Okay. Well, our guest tonight is Holly Clark. She's a 14-year-old race car driver from Colorado Springs. She races in the in the SRL Southwest Tour. She's a regular in the modified division, where she's sitting second in points behind Travis Thurkettle right now. And then she makes starts also in the Pro Late Series. Her last race out, she had 2 second place finishes. I'll tell you, really, really, really good race car driver. It's really, you know, I've had a chance to talk with her at the track a little bit, you know, here and there, and you know, yeah, I've been wanting to get her on the show, you know, to get a little bit more background on what she goes through as a driver and what it's like, you know, to race, you know, with in this series, you know. This series has always been one of the premier traveling series out there. So with that, we want to welcome you to the show. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Hi, it's good to be on.
So, first of all, let's get started with our time is always shorter on the show, so we usually do two or three different segments. So, what I want to start with is how did Holly Clark get started in racing, and what was it that drove you to race, you know, a modified, you know, then of course, you know, get into the pro league.
So, I mean, it all started at a very young age. I was about 4 and a half when my dad and his dad got together and were working on this project. My mom was watching from afar and, like, you know, she wasn't getting all the details about it, but dad was really excited about something and grandpa was excited about something. They're like, oh, we're working on something for Holly. We've got a little project for her. And my mom put two and two together, you know, the only things you guys get excited about is racing. And then she's like, you got her a race car, didn't you? And he's like, how'd you know? And so little four-year-old me just, we went down to our local track and, you know, got all by myself. And they sent me off in the car. My dad put a throttle stop on the car and, you know, he'd be on the back bumper and, like, shout commands at me and, like, let me know, like, what to do and all that. And then, you know, he pushed me off and got on the back bumper. And I floored it, pushed past the throttle stop. And, you know, dad went tumbling off the back of my quarter midget. And I went through the gate, through the wall and through the gate post. You know, turn one and two, I did okay. But once I got to turn four, I just, you know, destroyed it. So, you know, they come rushing over to me and they're like, and I'm crying. They're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I just wanted to cross the finish line. And, then, you know, 12. So, I mean, we all start. And, you know, so I, 9 years until 2019 in July when I won the national championship. And so that was for USAC, the points championship. And it was really cool. The race that secured it was at Indy. It was they do the little track right on the other side of Gasoline Alley, and we all get to take a lap around the big track in our quarter midgets. And there are about 600 cars total for that race, and it was really cool that I won it and took home the national championship with that. And it was funny. While we were at that race, my dad sees this ad on his Facebook page for the Madera Speedway Junior Late Model Challenge Camp. He's like, hey, is this something you'd be interested in? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so we go home, we, you know, get all set up, we write a, you know, resume and get some references, all that. And then, you know, we apply for it, you know, not knowing what to come of it. Because at this point, I was thinking, you know, racing right now is just family fun. I don't think I'd make a career out of this. And then we made the top 50 for that thing. And there was 400 applicants. We made the top 50, and then we made the top 12. And so that was really cool. That got me my very first experience in a late model. You got to learn, like, everything, marketing, you know, tires and setup, driver coaching, like, spotting, all of it. It was a great experience. It was amazing. And then, you know, from there on, I was kind of hooked. I was like, you know what? I like this. You know, I got that taste of stock car racing, and it wasn't too long after that I got the opportunity to drive someone else's modified. And I was still 13 at this time and got to race that a couple times. And that was a great experience. I raced that for about a year, maybe a little more than that. And then we decided to do our own modified program. And here we are for the past 2 years. We've been racing that car with the SRL. And, yeah, so it's been really good, really fun. And then we started racing the Prolate, of course, and, you know, we've been having a really good time with that. And so started at 4 and a half, and now I'm 17 looking for the next step.
You know, it's amazing to watch you out there, you know, especially in the modifieds. You know, the modifieds are, you know, I mean, the Prolate, you have a whole body around you, you know, so, I mean, if you mm-hmm. hit some if you bump, you know what, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, tire to tire contact, you know, somebody flipping.
Yeah.
Which so far we've been really fortunate in our modified series, you know, we haven't had that. Now, I know back when it was Lucas Oil modified, I used to go shoot a lot of that, and we used to see a lot of wrecks like that. But it seems like the guys in this modified series, they're a lot more, you know, it seems like the give and take is a lot more. Everybody's thinking, you know, about, hey, you know, we want to go home at the end of the night and think, with the car in one piece.
Yeah.
But that doesn't say that the racing is still top notch, you know what? And especially, you know, when you're up there, you know, racing against, third kettle, you know, and all the rest of the guys, because I'll tell you one thing, Kevin, Steven, Jimmy Sloan, William, Travis, all those guys, even when Eddie comes out, they don't give you no, they don't cut you no slack because,
no,
you know, it's like the way we look at it. You know what? The car doesn't know who's driving it. It doesn't know if it's a female or if it's a male. You know, the car is whoever's behind the wheel, that's the driver, you know. And that's, you know, that's how we always conduct our interviews. You know, like when we get the, you know, the male and the female, you know, we always say, you know what? You know, I don't like doing comparisons, you know, between, you know, the female drivers out there because the car doesn't know who's behind the wheel of it. And the way you drive that modified, it's really pretty amazing, you know what? And I mean, you've had two second place finishes this season, you know, sitting second in points behind Travis Thurkettle, you know. And what's it like racing with Travis and, you know, Steven and Kevin? I mean, Kevin, I think Travis has been around for ages. He's been around for, I mean, I think Travis is probably one of the cleanest drivers you'll ever get out there, but you know, I know some of the other ones are a little bit more, they're a little more rough on the edges.
Yeah, I mean, with both the divisions, I agree, like, it's relatively clean racing, you know, more or less. Sometimes we've had some races where it's not that great, and you know, you mentioned how, like, the late model, you have, you know, more body around you. And I do agree with that. Like, there's no wheel-to-wheel contact. But what's nice about the modified is there's a bumper. So, I mean, with the late model, you touch something and you're replacing half the body. But, you know, I love the modifieds, like, for that. I mean, I don't like using the bumper. But, you know, it's a little safety thing. But, I mean, racing those guys, everyone in the modified division, I love them. They're so nice, you know. They're great. I love racing them. They're tough. Both divisions, all the races, you know. They're going to race you hard, but for the most part, they'll race you pretty clean. And I love that. You know, we can bump and rub a little bit, but there's no real wrecking, you know, for most of the time. It's good, hard, competitive racing. And, you know, I'm good friends with a lot of the guys. You know, they're super nice to be around. And, you know, Travis, you know, he's won every race this year. But, you know, for me, it's like, I don't even really mind losing to him because he's so nice. He's so fun, and, you know, those guys are just, they're great, you know?
So how hard is it to do double duty, you know, especially on a bigger track like Urndale, Kern, you know, as, well, now, you know, actually it's going to be the first time the modified the race at Stockton. Are you planning on doing a double duty this weekend?
So I'm not doing double duty at Stockton because – we've watched some of the previous races and, you know, they're a little sketchy for the prolate. So we're just doing the one class because, you know, we've never been there before, and, you know, just trying it out, just dipping our toes in the water. And I mean, other times, you know, racing double duty, it's not too bad. A lot of the time there's the super lit model race in between. There was one time at Irwindale wasn't, and I had to run after parking car, like, all the way up the hill, to the back, in my helmet and all that, and hurriedly strapped into my car and hope everything was right and then just get out there. But, I mean, when you're tired racing, it's no such thing. You're not really thinking about that. You don't notice how worn out you are until after you get out of the car, and even you have to give it a couple hours because the adrenaline is just, you know, you have to wait for that to come down. Because, I mean, you're just at such a high, and then it takes a while to come back down. And because of the adrenaline and everything that's going on around you, you don't have time to think about the sensations you're getting in your body. You're just thinking about getting better the next lap or catching the car in front of you or how to not wreck when you're sitting in the middle of three wide, you know? So you're not thinking about much else, you know? So I find it's not too bad. And it also helps that I'm young. So it's easier for me to recover from that.
So you have all this, you're telling us about racing, you know what, and it's really neat, you know, to hear it all. Now, how do you mm-hmm. find a balance between keeping all the racing stuff in perspective and also going to school and getting good grades and keeping all that into perspective? You know, we get a lot of younger drivers, and that's one thing I always ask them, you know, is how do you find the time, you know, between racing, you know, I mean, you know, I like you're just telling us right now, you know, what it takes, and then, you know, and then also to go to school and get the grade that you get.
Yeah, so my parents have always told me, you know, school comes first. If I don't have good grades, we won't race. But I find, you know, with school, it's never really been an issue missing school. I just do like a prearranged absence stuff. And what's cool is because I'm in Colorado Springs specifically, is we have the Olympic Training Center. So we have like a lot of figure skaters and things like that. So they just put me in with like the elite athlete category. And the only time it was ever a little bit of an issue was like my freshman year of high school when, you know, my dean was like, there were all these requirements, like you had to be in the top 10% of your age group. And we were kind of like, well, I race adult men, so I'm in the top 1% of my age group. So that was, a little difficult, but we worked it out and it's fine. I usually find time to work on homework, going to the races and back and things like that. And I mean, it's not too bad. I can usually get things ahead of time or they're online or, you know, things like that. So, I mean, it's hard, but I've been doing it all my life. I mean, that's just what I know. So, I mean, I can't even see myself doing it any other way, going to school every day and not missing it. So that's just how I've lived.
Wow, that is awesome. And, you know, Holly, with that, I got this show host, Sharon. I know she has a couple of questions. And I think mm-hmm. she's probably going to end up closing out this segment. But with that, you know what? Like I said, you know what? We're going to have to definitely get you back on, you know, to keep the conversation going. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sharon right now.
Hi, Holly. It's really good to have you here tonight.
No, thank you so much.
I've enjoyed the interview that you've had with Sal and getting to know you a little bit. And I like to highlight the people behind the scenes that are helping you with your race team, obviously your dad and your grandfather. But this is the time of the night that I can give you some time to shout out anybody else that you want to give a shout out to.
Yeah, of course. So like you mentioned, my dad, who like crew chiefs my whole car, like, he drives us all the way to California and back, you know, sets it up. I've never even really seen him take a break. I mean, he works day and night for this and all that. My grandfather helps fund this. And, you know, my mom is always there for moral support. She keeps us organized. I mean, we would be a mess without her. So it's great to have her. And then our family business, Rocky Mountain Cycle Plaza, they really are big, like, you know, fund for this. And we wouldn't be able to do it without that. Pink Carburetors has helped us out, and I mean, they've given us great equipment that has really improved our performance on track. And I also want to thank, you know, AFCO, Longacre, and Swift Springs. They've also, you know, helped to provide us with great equipment to put on our car. And you know, the Longacre gauges, you can see from a mile away the glowing blue lights on my dash. I mean, they're good. They're great for those night races, and they're, you know, fantastic, great products. And then Olson Plumbing and Heating Company as well for just their support financially and, you know, moral support as well. They're great people to be around.
Well, once again, Holly, congratulations on a great season so far this year and two series. And also for taking some time out to be on the show here tonight. Like Sal said, we want to have you come back, so we hope we can work that out somewhere down the road here. And are you on social media?
I am on social media. So my old Instagram account is hacked, so now it's HollyClark_racing on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. If you search up Holly Clark Racing, it'll be the first account that comes up, although it's just Holly Clark as the name. And I'm also on Twitter a little less actively. It's capital H, Holly, capital C, and then _ racing.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for letting us know. And we hope you get some new followers to follow along with what's happening with your racing career and the rest of your season. So stay in touch with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.
Oh, for sure. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been fun.
Okay,
right,
thank you. All right, that is Holly Clark. She's the driver of the number 17 in the SRL Pro Late Model Series, as well as the Modified Series for her dad's Steve Clark Racing. So a lot of fun talking with Holly Clark here, Sal. And unfortunately, we do have to move on because we still have the Cup Series race that we have to review here. They were racing out at Atlanta Motor Speedway this past weekend. And it was a rain-shortened event, but, man, they put on some good racing. I think the pending rain made the race that much more exciting for the Quaker State 400 available at Walmart. William Byron was the winner at the age of 25, driving the number 24 Exalta Chevrolet for Rehendrick Motorsports. Rudy Fugel on top of the pit box this weekend. It was the eighth victory in 199 Cup Series races for William Byron, his fourth victory and 11th top 10 finish of 2020. I think he's the only driver with four victories in the Cup Series. It's also the second victory and third top 10 finish in 9 races at Atlanta. Daniel Suarez finished second. He sure wanted that race to keep going, but it had to end because of the rain. He posted his fourth top 10 finish in 10 races at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and it is his sixth top 10 finish this year. A.J. Allmendinger finished in third, posting his fourth top 10 finish in 15 races at Atlanta, and Noah Gregson was the highest finishing rookie. He finished in 33rd place. Now, for the race rundown here for the Cup Series, again, it was a rain-shortened event, but neither an early spin nor the damage to his number 24 Chevrolet could prevent William Byron from winning Saturday night's rain-shortened Quaker State 400 at Atlanta. William Byron won that race, although it was cut short on lap 185 of the scheduled 260 because of that rain. Again, he's the only driver with four wins this year and his second Atlanta win and his eighth career victory. Byron had an eventful evening, and that now goes down as a comeback after suffering a penalty, a spin, and falling a lap down early in the race. Daniel Suarez finished second, followed by A.J. Allmendinger, Michael McDowell, Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, J.J. Yaley, Justin Haley, Ryan Blaney, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Rounds out your top 10. The pole winner, Eric Almirola, led 46 laps and finished 18th. Stage 1 was won by Ryan Blaney. Stage 2 by Brad Keselowski. There were 18 lead changes among 12 drivers and 7 cautions for 43 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race, 118.475 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers in the Quaker State 400?
Yeah, I'll tell you, for William Byron went through to get that win, even though it was rain shortened. You know what? Kyle Busch is eating a lot of crow right now. Because a couple months ago, he was just ripping on William Byron and the racer that he was, the racer that he is, and everything, you know what? And you know, now he's leading the series with four wins, but not only that, but just all the all everything that happened to him on Sunday, you know, for him to get the win, you know, that, I mean, basically solidifies him, you know, as a contender. And I think one of the reasons Kyle's so upset too is because Rudy Fugle was his crew chief for a long time when he was running the truck series. He was actually, that was Noah Gregson's crew chief when Noah was running with Kyle Busch Motorsports. And then last year they made the transition when Rudy left Kyle Busch Motorsports and came over here to Hendrick Motorsports and ended up with William Byron and now look at what he's done with William Byron, you know. But I mean, congratulations on the win. Rain short, doesn't matter. Great finish by Daniel Suarez, you know, finishing second. Trackhouse Racing is just really making a lot of noise this year. They are making a lot of noise this year. You know, AJ Allmendinger with the third place finish. Michael McDowell, gosh, you know, another top five. Kyle Busch right in there, you know, still keeping RCR strong. Brad Keselowski with the sixth place finish, you know, gosh, you know, what a difference a year has made with them. Keselowski and Ricky Stenhouse finally breaking the Daytona 500 win slump, you know, getting a top 10,
mm-hmm.
you know, top 10 finish. You know, all in all, you know what, you know, once again, you know, Hendrick is flexing their muscle. You know,
yes,
and,
they are.
You know, grabbing
a lot of
wins
people
and,
would
you know,
be a Ford in victory lane, but William Byron proved that wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, you know, Daniel Swartz, you know, getting that second finish.
In the top five, the only Ford was Michael McDowell.
Yeah, he was.
Okay, there were 34 cars running at the end of this race. Only 27 of those cars finished all 185 laps. The rest of them were finished with a lap or more down. A couple of cars were out early because of DVP, the damaged vehicle policy. Austin Hill driving the number 62 out on lap 92 due to the damaged vehicle policy. And Kyle Larson had an accident that took him out of the race on lap 111. And Ross Chastain, also out on lap 120 because of a DVP, the damaged vehicle policy. So the race did end under caution because of the rain. And I know a lot of fans were upset that the race didn't start earlier, so we couldn't see more of the race. But I think NASCAR made the right call.
Yeah, and I think it was kind of neat. They're showing, you know, the fans, you know, that were over there, you know, getting, you know, autographs. And there's a few, you know, that brought their watermelons, you know, to have them sign them. But, you know, I guess those are the fans that don't realize that the watermelon isn't like a diecast or a program
right.
that can last a long time, you know. I mean, the watermelon, you know, you're eventually going to either eat it or unless they cut that piece of the watermelon off and go and
shellack it.
You know, and save it. But, you know, it's kind of funny to see Chastain, you know, signing watermelons, you know.
Yeah, that is cool. Okay, let's go ahead and cover the points report before we run out of time, Sal.
All right, let me get... trying to stay cool over here. It's really a minor heat wave, and I didn't get a chance to turn the AC on. I should have. Okay, so our points is William Byron is still leading the points with, like you said, with the 4 race wins, 7 stage wins, and 22 playoff points. Second, Martin Truex Jr., who has 2 race wins, right on the heels of William Byron is Kyle Busch with his 3 race wins. Fourth is Christopher Bell with his 1 race win. Fifth is Ross Chastain, who has a race win. Sixth is Denny Hamlin with the race win. Seventh is Ryan Blaney with the race win. And eighth is Kyle Larson with 2 race wins. And then from there, then we go down to Kevin Harvick, who I know was the was one of the favorites to win this race. You know, everybody really wanted him to win it, you know, after, you know, with especially with the pre-race with Richard Childress, you know, making the laps. And, yeah, in his, you know, in his old number 29 car, you know, that he won the race in after Dale Earnhardt had died at Daytona. And then 10th was Joey Logano. 11th position is Chris Buescher. Brad Keselowski still in there in 12th. Tyler Reddick, 13th. Ricky Stenhouse, 14th. Daniel Suarez and Michael McDowell actually are tied for Daniel Suarez and Michael McDowell are 15th and 16th. Bubba Wallace dropped out. He's at 404. So Bubba Wallace is out of the playoffs right now, and he's 3 points out.
McDowell is in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing how dominant William Byron has been this season. Not only is he leading with the four race wins, but he has seven stage wins, two more than the next driver, who is Ross Chastain, who has the five race wins, but only one of the five stage wins with only one race win. So really kind of amazing to watch these stage points and how they race wins and how they all play out as main playoff points. But it will make a difference at the end.
Oh, yeah, it always has, you know what, and it's just going to be, Kyle Busch and William Byron up there with 17 and 22, you know, they're going to see probably the first two rounds, you know, they're going to skate. I'm not saying they're going to skate through them, you know, but, you know, depending on how the rest of it plays off, you know, I mean, you know, they're pretty well set, you know, to get into the, you know, to get past the first two rounds. But, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah, you're right. Anything can happen. We've still got some racing to do. You're going to be at the SRL races this week?
Yes, I'm still working out. I'm getting messages right now on how I'm going to get, what I'm going to do. Usually I fly, but I think I'm going to drive up there. But it's going to be like 109 for the race, and I'm really not looking forward to it.
Yeah, that sounds good. Hot day. Make sure you hydrate really well, Sal.
Oh, I start hydrating like in January for the season.
I believe it. Sandy going to go along?
Nah, there's no way. She hardly goes anymore. But 109 degree weather, there is no way. She says, I am not.
Not going to subject yourself to that.
She goes, don't even think about it. She goes, don't even entertain the thought. She goes, she's not going to. She's done a couple races where she's going to be where it's hot, but she goes, this one is not.
Well, keep in mind, my brother and I are going back out to Las Vegas this fall. So I hope to see you out there this fall again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure I'll be out there. I might even see about getting a photo credential and just staying out there for the whole weekend.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. Hopefully we won't run into the Utah police on our way there this time. That's what caused us to be late last time, that we got caught up in a power nail strip. They were trying to catch somebody who stole a car, and I guess our car looked just like that car, and they nailed us. And that's what delayed us getting to the racetrack. But hopefully that won't happen again.
Well, at least you got new, hopefully you got new tires out of the deal.
They did. They bought the tire. Only one tire went flat. They bought the tire,
okay.
Changed it and everything. So that was that worked out okay. But it did delay us.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
Sal.
Well, you got to get a police scanner. Got to get a police
there
scanner.
There you go. Yeah, that's what we need. But have fun at the SRL races this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, you guys have fun. Have a nice weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Okay, goodbye.
Okay, good night, Sal. We are at the top of the hour. That means it's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and the Fan for Racing crew are all here. So I'm going to start bringing them into the queue. And let's see. Let's start with Andy. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hello, Sharon. How are you doing on this evening?
I'm doing very well this evening. We've had quite the discussion already on some of the hot topics already. I've gotten Sal's take, but I know you guys have some takes on some of these hot topics as well. So let's go to Jay Huseman next. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. It's already been an entertaining couple of minutes that I've been on hold because I forgot you had you were driving a wanted car in Utah. I'd forgotten that story, so I got to hear that again.
Yeah, I was like, what is that? Because I saw this thing, you know, moving on the highway, and I had the police chasing the car that was stolen on the left side of me, and when I tried to pull over, there was a line of police cars on the shoulder, so I had nowhere to go. The only place I had to go was over the nail strip, and I thought we were pretty fortunate to just have the one tire that went down.
Well, you're safe now. It makes quite the story, I'll tell you that.
It does indeed. And we also have Mike Orzel here tonight. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hello, good evening, everybody. I am dry. I am well-rested, and the reason is because the plans that I was trying to put together with Jay and Andy to go to the race yesterday, I kind of fell through, and I don't really regret it, having seen what all went down.
Okay. With that, Mike, why don't we have you do our first hot topic here?
Well, this will be a little bit self-serving, but there was a lot of discussion about NASCAR moving a few races, Atlanta and then the Nashville race a couple weeks ago in particular, to be Sunday evening races. And the big reason that they did this is because last year it was extremely hot, the late June and middle of July respectively for those two races. And the idea was to make it a little bit more comfortable for fans who would attend the race. So having seen those two races take place so far this year, I'm wondering what everyone's thoughts on it is.
Okay, Andy, what are your thoughts?
I think it was a good decision, truthfully. You know, I think that you have to consider whether this time of year, it's in the middle of the summer now, you know, sitting in the grandstands in the heat of the day isn't the funnest thing to do, especially when it's 95 degrees and really hot and humid. So I think that when you look at Nashville and Atlanta, obviously, you know, very hot this time of year, as is most places in the country, but specifically those areas can get pretty brutal, I think. So good decision ultimately to move them to night races. You know, the Nashville race obviously went off without a hitch. You know, certainly Atlanta, disappointing to see that it was rain shortened, but I think that it was totally fine as a night race. It appeared to be a bigger crowd. I think Mike might have mentioned that in the notes for this particular hot topic. So really don't see it as a bad thing. I think that it may just take some getting used to for some people, apparently, that the race took place on a Sunday night. But whether it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I don't care. I mean, you know, I do think that from a comfort standpoint for those that did attend the event, I think it was much better. So good decision overall. I think that, you know, yes, it's disappointing certainly to see it rain shortened, but, you know, rain can come at any time, whether the race starts at 1 in the afternoon or 9 p.m., you know, thunderstorms and rain can move through at any given time. So just unfortunate circumstances that the race was rain shortened, but, you know, that's something that can't always be controlled. So ultimately not a bad decision.
Okay, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot of things to factor in when you talk about that. I know this time of year you're not competing against football. I know that's one of the things that gets looked at. But from just the weather perspective, I think Andy already said it and Mike's highlighted it. The temperature-wise, I think, was. And there was good racing with that transition from day to night that you got to deal with. And especially with Atlanta, the way that track working it in under the new reconfiguration. I saw some stuff of Kyle Busch's opinions of back 2 years ago when they did it versus now. The racing is good, so I think it was, both of them have said, a much more enjoyable race for the fans that are there at the track. Andy mentioned it, the only issue there is then you're going to get the complaint of have to go to work Monday. They can't get back home and still go to work Monday necessarily. But as far as the rain, that's unfortunate. And that was a little bit of why I hesitated on taking Mike up and running over to that race with him, as we had had tons of rain in the last 3 days, and I assumed it was moving that direction. So unfortunate. I've been in rain, been at racetracks where you get the rain delay and possible a shortened race, but there's nothing NASCAR can do about that. There really isn't.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you guys said. I think that NASCAR made the right call in calling the race and declaring William Byron as the winner. William Byron really was the class of the field. He raced he had to overcome a penalty, he had to overcome several different things in order to be up there at the end and contending for that win. And some of those things played into his favor, but I thought the right guy won that race. It was good to see that happen. I thought the rain also, as you guys have mentioned, I thought the rain made the race more exciting to watch. There was a sense of urgency for all of the drivers to get out front and be as close to the front as they could possibly be for the end of this race. They knew the rain was coming. They knew what was going to happen, and they were trying to position themselves for that eventual rain coming. There's been a lot of talk about why didn't NASCAR start the race earlier if they knew there was rain coming. There's a lot of logistics that go into that. Once you publish a race start, it's really hard to get the word out to everybody, race fans included, that race is going to start earlier unless you can do it the day before. And then you're kind of at the mercy of the weather report as to whether or not you're doing the right thing by starting the race early. NASCAR's in a no-win situation when it comes to this type of a situation. They try to do the best they can with the information that they have at hand, and the weather is very unpredictable. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they don't, and NASCAR has to figure it out what's going to be the best for the racing situation. And I think they did what was actually fair. One of the things that I also I know the fans don't want to be out in that hot, hot weather and the humidity of Atlanta. So I think having the later start is the smart thing to do. But the other part of that is that there's always the risk of rain coming. So at night, especially in those southern states like Georgia and Florida, where it rains nearly every day at some point of the day. So it's a no-win situation for NASCAR. Oh, I know what I was going to say. One of the things that I think also factored into their decision to go ahead and call it is that you had different pit strategies that were playing out there, and some of these guys were staying out and not having pitted. And the longer they were racing or just driving those pace laps around the track, the more gas that was being used and no opportunity to pit for gas. So I think that played into their decision as well. And I do think that NASCAR made the right call having the late race, and I think they made the right call with calling it when they did. Mike, what are your thoughts?
I've told this story before a few times on the show, but I grew up on the east coast of Florida. Daytona was my local track when I was growing up. And I went to many, many a summer Daytona race in the middle of July before they put the lights in at that racetrack. And let me tell you what, I was a kid at the time, so I didn't necessarily appreciate it as much as maybe I would have as a grown-up. And I certainly didn't have a choice in the matter because Mom and Dad said we're going to the race this weekend, so we're going to the race this weekend. It doesn't matter how hot it is. And Mike's going to be up there sweating and crying his eyes out because it was brutally hot. So I can absolutely sympathize with the fans in Atlanta last year who decided to not go to the race because of the heat that was there. I don't have any numbers for what capacity or what percentage of capacity they were at the racetrack this past race last night versus last year. I will say subjectively, just what I saw on TV, it looked like there were more fans in attendance. This race was not sold out. They didn't publicize that it was sold out. And when I looked at potentially buying tickets on Friday, there were still a decent number of tickets available, but it definitely wasn't wide open like it looked like it was last year. So I think moving it to the evening did help at least a little bit in terms of getting fans to turn out to the racetrack and watch the race in person. Whether that matters – so we got more people to show up to the racetrack, but the trade-off, the potential trade-off is, were there more or fewer eyes watching it on TV? And we won't know that number for maybe a couple days until they release the TV ratings from there. I don't know. It's the difficult thing, like Andy mentioned, was people having to go to work on Monday. For people in the line of work like me and Andy, weekends, holidays, whatever, those don't really matter because they're all kind of relative to us. You know, we can just as easily work on a Saturday as we can on a Tuesday, just by virtue of the job that we have and the way that's scheduled, but that's not the way it is for a lot of people. Most people do work that Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 or some similar schedule to that. So it is an important thing about when they can get to bed on Sunday evening and how much alcohol they can drink and, you know, all those factors that go into being able to be a grown up and show up to work on time and ready to work on Monday morning. That does play into somebody's decision about whether they can even watch a race on TV, much less travel to go to one in person. So it is a bit of a trade-off from there. The Sunday night races, we'll have to see whether it's worth it from a ratings standpoint. I would say as a fan, last year I was not super interested in going to that race in the middle of July during the day for the same reason that apparently a lot of other people weren't, because it was so incredibly hot. This year I was interested in going. It didn't end up working out. I would have liked to go, and maybe I'll try again next year so long as it's an evening race, because it's a little bit more palatable from a weather and comfort standpoint. And believe it or not, a little self-serving here, I did write an article on this subject on Fan for Racing last year regarding some of the things that Atlanta could do in order to improve fan attendance at the race. And one of the suggestions that I came up with was move it to the night. So really, I think I should take credit for those whole ideas, really what it sounds like.
Okay. Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, obviously NASCAR read that article, Mike. And they completely agreed, and I think you'll find all of their decision-making was 100% based off that. So congratulations to you. You're a genius. No, seriously, though, from the work thing, that's kind of what did it in for me. Like, with my job, I'm on reserve, which basically means I'm on call, and I went on call at midnight last night, and so that meant that I couldn't really fly home today. So that's what kind of did it in for me. If the race had been earlier in the day, I probably could have done it. Too bad, because it did look like a really good race. It was a good race. So like Mike said, maybe we can make it happen next year. I do think that the evening races on Sundays was a good decision. And what I've really, kind of enjoyed seeing from NASCAR the past couple, 3 years is they're not afraid to try something different from the norm, I think maybe you might start to see this become more of a thing, at least during the summer months. And it doesn't necessarily make sense every week, but, Nashville and certainly Atlanta, it seemed to make sense, and I think it was a good decision.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Well, in my experience with the heat wasn't one of the southern ones. It was at middle of the state. It was Indianapolis. I mean, they had to do the same thing. They couldn't keep that date and keep it at the time when it was. I don't know if we hit 100 that day, but it sure felt like it. So NASCAR's doing whatever they can to try and accommodate. They're hearing the fans. They're listening to them when there's a valid complaint or issue. But then, like I said, on the reverse side, you run into the issue of running late into Sunday night and people that have to go to work on Monday. So they got to find that balance, but I think this one was a good decision, especially, like I said, I feel like maybe the race at Atlanta increased. Obviously, Sharon, you said that the weather coming, the teams know it. I listened to an interview on SiriusXM with William Byron's crew chief, Rudy Fugel, and he talked about that. They had made their decision to pit a little bit earlier and be able to stay out then when it hit. I mean, they had calculated the storm was moving at 20 miles per hour or what time it should get there and, you know, start seeing the edge of the rain. So these teams have all that same information that NASCAR is making their decision based off of. Excuse me. I think it really added to not just the intensity you talked about, Sharon, but the strategy. And William Byron's in a position of, if they make the wrong call, they're not out anything. They had three wins already. The playoff points they've accumulated, they can make those calls. That's why it's important winning early in the season and building up those playoff points. So all of that is different for each team. I know when they talked about Brad Keselowski, he couldn't afford to take that chance and really get hung out, because if he doesn't get a win, he's got to try and get in on points. So they had a different situation they were dealing with. So I thought it really added all together. Not that I ever want to see any race end under rain, but it did add some different elements to it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, I think you guys have hit on all the major points, so I don't really have anything to add here. So, Mike, I'll let you close it out.
Well, with regard to the rain, yes, historically, the later in the afternoon you run, the more likely it is you're going to get put in a box by rain. And that's exactly what happened to NASCAR this past weekend in Atlanta. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to rain in the late afternoon. In fact, they couldn't have run that Chicago race a minute earlier in the day because rain from basically sunrise until the green flag of the Chicago street race. So you can't win them all. Yes, obviously, from a climactic standpoint, historically speaking, it does tend to skew towards the late afternoon into the evening for rain in the southeast this time of year. It is what it is. You run the risk of either killing your attendance by trying to run the race during the day or potentially killing your attendance by people staying away because of the rain. You can only do so much winning here. We're not all William Byron who can apparently win all the time. You can only win so many times out here. So you're either going to win against the weather, you're going to win against the heat, but you might not win all of them. I think NASCAR made the right call here. I don't think that this needs to be – remember, you know, 10 years ago, it seemed like every race moved to a Saturday night race, and every track was putting in lights, and the Cup Series was running – it seemed like the Cup Series was running as many races on Saturday nights as they were – on Sunday afternoons, which is the traditional time for a NASCAR Cup Series race. I don't think we need to move in that direction. If the circumstances require it, i.e. Atlanta, Daytona, it's not an option at Indianapolis because there's no lights, but Nashville, things like that, where fan comfort, fan safety for that matter, I mean, it's legitimately hot enough that somebody can get injured because of that heat this time of year in this part of the country. So fan comfort, fan safety, if that's what pushes a later start time, great. But I don't think this needs to be a fad that they need to go and move every race to Sunday night like they did 10 years ago. I don't think we need to go down that road. But it is a welcome change, and I like what they're doing, trying to keep fan comfort and safety in account when they're scheduling these races.
All right. Andy, what's our next hot topic going to be?
Now, this one was a pretty interesting one from the ARCA race. Venturini Motorsports teammates Dean Thompson and Sean Hingorani got together in what appeared to be an intentional wreck on the last lap of the race.
Okay. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, I always get accused of being the positive guy and being on the side of the what if, but no, Sean Hingorani clearly waited and did not, or took out his teammate, made sure he didn't win it. We'll just say that. NASCAR has opted to suspend him. The only issue I have here is the suspension, because, again, it was his own teammate, for that matter, I understand, but he didn't right hook him, especially at high speeds. I think that is one where I think they need to leave it up to the team, which I'm sure the team itself is going to take some action and has some issues with how it went down. But that was one where I realized it wasn't racing, clean racing, but there wasn't also any major damage. I mean, he just kind of drifted up and drove him off the track. So I don't know that I like the suspension, but NASCAR is trying to say, hey, we don't want to see that at all. When it comes to that of, I know we like to use the term using your car as a weapon. Like I said, it wasn't a hard hook or anything or a drill dimmer or anything. He just drove him up and off the track. And unfortunate for Dean Thomas, he was second place at the time. I don't know that he was going to win it anyway, but was in contention, and it really ruined a good day for him. And like I said, I think the team was going to certainly take issue with it regardless. So I think NASCAR could have let them handle it amongst themselves.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts?
It's the time of the evening. It's my favorite time. It's the time I get to disagree with Jay. I do not think that teammates or any sort of team dynamic should come into play one way or the other, not even a little bit, when it comes to penalty decisions. If one competitor decides he's going to do something that negatively affects another competitor, especially if it's dangerous, it shouldn't matter if they are teammates or not. This isn't NASCAR, this is ARCA, but NASCAR owns ARCA, but ARCA kind of operates independently. But either way, ARCA has stepped in and said, no, this is not acceptable, we need to suspend you, and I agree with that. And I don't think it should be, oh, well, they were teammates, we're going to handle it among the team, because when you start doing that, now you start having some different penalty structures. So Venturini Motorsports might have a different penalty structure than Rev Racing. Venturini might not care. Okay, cool, you wrecked your teammate, whatever. Maybe don't do that again next time and there's no repercussions. Versus Rev Racing might say, no, man, we're sitting you for 5 races for that. So that's, yes, the team still has the ability to, if ARCA says you're down for 1 race, if the team wants to sit him for 5, I guess the team can do that. But at the very least, from the sanctioning body standpoint, there's consistency there, and I think that is important. As far as what the penalty is, I understand that it was low speed. I understand that it wasn't super dangerous, but at the same time, the precedent here was the Matt Kenseth precedent. Matt Kenseth hung around running slow laps until Joey Logano came by and he took him out. Yes, he put Logano in the wall versus putting him into a sand trap, but either way, it was that deliberate, intentionally running slow, waiting for your target to come by, and then attacking. And the precedent there was Matt Kenseth was suspended 2 races. I think Sean Hingarati got away with one here, only being suspended 1 race. And from a consistency standpoint, again, this is ARCA, not NASCAR, so maybe they have a little bit different penalty structure and rule book, but this could have easily, maybe should have been a 2-race suspension.
Okay. Actually, there is a consistency problem. Because earlier this year there was a battle between Todd Souza and I think it was Tyler Reif, it might have been Tanner Reif, but there were no suspensions in that case, and there probably should have been. And I'd like to understand what the difference was and why they didn't penalize in that situation and did penalize in this situation. I've looked at the video a few times. I know Sean Hingarani slowed down and waited for Dean Thompson, who was running second at the time, to make his move. But if you and this is kind of a historically, these two have kind of tangled before. But that is egregious on Sean Hingarani's part. But if you watch the video of when they actually hit each other, what I saw is Dean Thompson making a turn into the number 15. Dean Thompson's the number 55 car. Sean Hingarani is the 15, and it's the 55 car that makes the turn into the 15 first. Sean Hingarani then pushes back, and that's when he pushes him off of the road course. So I really, you know, looking at the video, it makes me think that maybe there should have been 2 penalties put out there, for both Dean Thompson and Sean Hingorani. And I do think that they've tangled before. This is not the first time that the teammates have tangled with each other. I do feel like maybe Venturini could have been handling this on their own within the team, knowing that they've kind of had this rivalry building up. But apparently there was no consequence for their actions, and that's why I think Arca felt that they needed to step in. But, yeah, I'd like to know what the difference is between the Hingorani and Dean Thompson situation versus the Reif and Souza situation that happened earlier this season. That was a fatal taking somebody, not a fatal, but a serious taking someone out of the race between those two as well. And there should have been a penalty then and was not. And yet there was a penalty here. So I need to know what the difference is. I do think that there is a consistency issue there. And if somebody can explain the difference to me, I'd be open to hearing it. Andy.
Sharon, did you want to go ahead and do the 10:30 routine?
Yeah, thank you so much. At this time of the night, I do make a special announcement to all of our first-time listeners. We go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but we're going to continue our conversation, and that part of the conversation past that 10:30 mark is still recorded, even though we go off the air. That part of the conversation will be available on our podcast, and I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know when that podcast is available. And then at that time or at any your convenience, you can go to the two-hour mark on the player at fanforacing.com or any of the other avenues that play our podcast, and just fast forward to that two-hour mark to listen to the rest of the conversation. Again, we don't want anybody to be caught off guard and not know how they can hear the rest of the conversation when we go off air kind of mid-sentence here. So with that, Andy, your thoughts.
Yeah, this was a tough scenario. I haven't seen anyone that defended the move. And to be fair, I didn't actually see what transpired between the two earlier in the event. Obviously, there must have been some contact or some reason that precipitated, you know, the anger on Sean Hingorani's part. But, I mean, that's not the way to do it, you know. And we've certainly seen instances in the past of somebody taking out another driver that wasn't their teammate, and that's not okay either. But to blatantly wait and take out a teammate who was running in the top five and wreck both vehicles and get stuck in the sand and thereby hindering both finishes is really just a bad look. And really, you know, it comes from apparently somebody that has no respect for their team or the equipment that they're racing in. You know, I mean, I realize a lot of these kids are pay drivers in the ARCA series, you know, and maybe they need to be taught a lesson or something. But from what I saw, if I were Billy Venturini, I'd be really upset and probably fire somebody for pulling a stunt like that, because what Sean did was completely uncalled for. I'm sorry. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I don't know what Dean did earlier in the race, you know, so it's hard for me to get that side of it. But from just analyzing the end incident, at the end of the race, I felt for Dean Thompson. He was running well, I think second or third when he got taken out. So I think it was ultimately the right decision on the sanctioning body's part to suspend the driver. I think a lesson needs to be taught. You know, some of these guys just have zero respect for the equipment in their other competitors, and maybe sitting a race out will give him, you know, some perspective to be a better person moving forward. But certainly what he did, it really was a bad look, and it wasn't just, you know, it's not just us that were talking about it now that we're, you know, admonishing what he did. It was the on-air personalities, you know, other drivers, competitors, team owners, like pretty much everybody within the industry noted that it was a really bad look that what he did. So, I mean, if that's, that's probably not the way to attract sponsors and, you know, prospective teams moving forward in as far as career advancement. So hopefully sitting out this race teaches him somewhat of a lesson in terms of how to conduct himself moving forward, and hopefully he'll be better from it.
Okay, Jay.
Well, this goes back to, and I know it's kind of a difficult thing to really know, because as Mike pointed out, ARCA is owned by NASCAR, but still runs its own series. So this is a kind of a not necessarily, but they're following NASCAR's precedent. I just don't want to see it become where there's contact and the driver gets suspended. Clearly, this was intentional. I'm not disputing that. But that's where I say it was not a dangerous type of move. I mean, he just drifted him off the track. You have that capability at a road course. I know Mike compared it to the Matt Kenseth, Joey Logano deal. I mean, he drove him up into the wall in that case. So there's a lot more risk involved there. What I look at is going back to the Denny Hamlin. Again, this is at NASCAR, the top level. Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain. Denny Hamlin backed up to try and pinch him and prevent him from finishing any better than he was going to. NASCAR didn't even initially do anything, but once they heard Denny Hamlin admit it, they fined him. They didn't suspend him. So that's where I see the inconsistency. But I also think that, as we've seen in the past with these younger drivers, if we're going to put it on younger drivers, but drivers coming up through the ranks to get to the Cup Series come with that attitude of push and shove and anything goes, that maybe that's where the ARCA Menard series is saying, hey, we got to start teaching them here at this level. That's not okay. So that's not a major issue when they get to the next series. So I understand it. I just, like I said, I don't think it was a hard enough, I don't want to say hard enough, but an egregious enough situation. And I wasn't saying they shouldn't because they were teammates. I'm just saying kind of going back to the old day of the drivers in the garage are going to police themselves. And I know that, to go to the Brad Keselowski and Carl Edwards situation back 10 years ago, that one got out of hand. I mean, that got to the point where NASCAR had to step in and say, I believe Denny Hamlin actually entered an Xfinity race with the intent to go at Carl Edwards, you know. Brad Keselowski and Carl Edwards. You know, that's where it's getting out of hand. If you're going out there to race just to take somebody out, yes, then NASCAR, the sanctioning body, whoever it be, needs to step in. But in this situation, I think it could have gotten maybe a fine or whatever, but I know that generally doesn't work real well. But a warning of some sort, because like I said, I just didn't see it as a real terrible thing of what we called the right hooking at high speeds into a wall.
Mike?
Unfortunately, ARCA is in a really sad state right now. This wasn't the only ugly incident from just this race. There were a couple of other incidents where drivers are intentionally wrecking other drivers, and it sounds like the Hingorani penalty is the only one that's going to come out of this one. Another good example is kind of midway through the race, Dale Quarterly made a three-wide move coming down into one of the turns, and he made a three-wide move cleanly past two other cars. And Andres Perez, who was kind of in the middle of that one, took exception to it. And the next turn, he just dumped Dale Quarterly for absolutely no other reason than, I don't appreciate you passing me. So that's kind of the problem with ARCA right now. It is more expensive to run ARCA than just about any potential financial return. There aren't enough sponsors, and the purses are way, way, way too low to really justify running ARCA is in terms of trying to make any kind of money off of it. You look at Greg Van Alst, he won the Daytona race, the season opener for ARCA, and he said it cost him more money to go down there, enter that race, and win it than he ended up putting in his pocket between race winnings, any kind of sponsorship deals or anything. He was a net negative in terms of going down there and winning Daytona. So what that's resulted in is an ARCA series that has just become a playground for spoiled rich kids who have never had to actually work on a race car. They've had dad buy whatever they wanted, all the way from the go-karts all the way now into the ARCA series, and they're used to having their way with whatever money can buy. And when they don't have their way, they throw a little tantrum, they wreck other race cars, and they just do the kind of things that we saw this past weekend at Mid-Ohio, and it's unfortunate. And I'm not sure what the fix is from ARCA, but one or two race suspensions for drivers who do stuff like this, that's addressing the symptom. But the overall problem, I think, is much deeper in ARCA, and it's going to take a much bigger fix to it than just addressing individual driver behavior.
Yeah, I have to agree to a certain extent. This isn't the first time that we've seen this happen. It's happened several times within the ARCA Menards series. And that's what's confusing me, is that they haven't done anything previous to this, but they did here. Now, I'm not exonerating Sean Hingorani for what he did. I totally agree that he should have been suspended for a race. I have no doubts about that whatsoever. He impacted the outcome of that race. His teammate was running second. He sat and waited for him to come by so that he could take him out, so that he would not finish second in that race. So you don't impact the results of the race, and that's obviously what happened here. I think Dean Thompson tried to fight back and tried to, you know, and that's the problem. These guys try to get back at each other, and then they're out there with two race cars bumping and banging, more than bumping and banging. They're trying to destroy one another so that they don't finish the race. And in this case, it's impacting the one team, Venturini Motorsports. They're a premier team owner in the ARCA Menards series, but it still costs them money when something like that happens. So it's not the right way to go about racing. It's not what fans tune in to watch. They, at least I don't tune in to watch people bump and bang into each other. I watch to see who has the talent to finish these races and to win cleanly. And I know that's an ideal. I do understand some bumping and banging, but not to the point that you're taking out a teammate, not to the point that you're impacting the results of the race, and that's what happened in this particular case. But I do think that Sean Hingorani did that for a reason. And so I think that maybe they need to go back and look at the entire race and see if Dean Thompson didn't do something earlier in the race that caused Sean Hingorani to make that move. But I do think if you look at that video that's circulating.
Dean Thompson did spin out Sean Hingorani earlier in the race. He sent him all the way around, but Dean Thompson forced him off the racetrack. This didn't come out of nowhere. There had been rough racing, full contact racing between them earlier in the race. So this was retaliation for what Dean Thompson did to him earlier in the race.
That's why I think that there should have been two penalties. Because also when I look at the video, I seen Dean Thompson move up toward the 15 before I see the 15 moving to push him off the track. So obviously there's bad blood there, because this is not the first race that we've seen those two going at each other. And I know ARCA was in a position they had to do something before it gets worse. But he did impact the finish of this race. Dean Thompson was running second, and Sean Hingorani wasn't going to have it. So you can't race that way. You just can't do it that way. It's wrong. And I think it forced the hand of ARCA. They had to come in with the penalty. Andy.
Yeah, and I think what's kind of unfortunate, you know, about this incident overshadowing the race is the race itself was actually pretty good, one of the better ARCA races that I've seen in quite a while. You know, so it's too bad that this incident, you know, took the headlines from it. But I just have to hope that, you know, this penalty maybe – you know, can teach Sean and other drivers a lesson about, you know, not intentionally wrecking people. And, you know, again, I didn't see the first incident. You know, it's hard to say if what transpired earlier in the race was intentional or not, but, you know, it's pretty obvious that the last incident was intentional. And, you know, I think that that's the tough scenario. And you know, you have to feel for the team, you know, that works on these race cars, because due to, you know, one driver taking out a teammate and, you know, causing them to both spin off into the gravel trap, that's a lot of extra work on those race cars, you know, that the team guys have to go through. So that's what you feel for the most, is the guys that have to suffer the consequences, because I would bet probably my life savings that the driver doesn't have to deal with that at all. And that's where I think the suspension and sitting out a race may help teach him a lesson. So that's all you can hope for. Is this the last time we see this? No, probably not. I think that as long as there's racing, there will always be incidents like this. And I think the key is what people can take away from them, you know, in a positive manner moving forward.
Okay. Talking about moving forward, Jay, you get to pick the next hot topic.
All right. Let's go with the possible return to Canada for at least a race. I don't know if it's going to be necessarily a Cup Series, but I think that was focused on. Let me pull it up here. But returning to Canada, NASCAR in some fashion returning to Canada. Been a lot more talk about it again.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts.
This is an interesting avenue. Yeah, this is coming from, I think Jeff Gluck is repeating, or he reposted an article originally written by Bob Pockers from Fox Sports. But what the overall gist is, the word is the teams have been told to get their passports ready for a potential trip to Canada next year. No details on when, no details on where, no details on whether it is Cup Series or some of the other series from there. So we're still waiting on a lot of information here, but obviously something like passports has a long lead time potentially. So it's important for these teams to know as soon as possible to make sure that they have all their documentation in order to leave the country if necessary in order to make something like this happen. So chances are NASCAR wouldn't raise that flag if there wasn't at least a possibility of doing something there. So what potentially could they do? Well, the Truck Series, and I believe the Xfinity Series used to run at Mosport, Canadian Tire Motorsport Park. There's also Circuit Jacques Villeneuve. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. I speak a different kind of French more fluently than that. So there's that. And there's also the street race option. Obviously, we just ran the street race in Chicago, and that kind of opened the door a little bit to whether they want to run a similar circuit to Montreal, where the IndyCar series runs, or if they want to come up with a different street race circuit somewhere else within Canada, that's another potential option. So a lot of different things that are possible on the table. We don't know what they're going to be, but we've talked about before where NASCAR wants to reach out to an international market. They've kind of contracted back away from that international market back into exclusively being within the continental United States. But as the popularity of the sport is growing again, and as they're reaching out to, we saw Europe with the Garage 56 24-hour Le Mans car, and now also potentially going up to Canada for a race with one or more of their top-level series, the sport is trying to reach out and grow that audience beyond the boundaries of the United States, and I like seeing it.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, this is a good thing, certainly. I think that NASCAR making the return to Canada would be good, you know, from their global standpoint. You know, Canada is not really global, I guess, but it would be nice to see them once again expand outside of the borders here of the United States. You know, I remember when they did Mexico for the Busch Series, and also up at Montreal for the Busch Series back in the mid-2000s. And those were some great races, you know, so I would certainly welcome the return, especially, you know, for the Cup Series to go up and race at some of these venues outside of the country. I think that NASCAR right now is in a position to try to grow their brand globally and outside of the U.S., and I think that's a good thing. So, you know, certainly to see a return, you know, to some of these racetracks that we've been to perhaps in the past, you know, would be fun. And I remember Montreal specifically, if that's in fact where NASCAR is planning to go, they put on some very good races. So it would be fun to see them go back there. The question, of course, and I think we've talked about this on the show previously, is at what expense would the addition of a Canada race be on the schedule? You know, I guess it would be interesting to see where that date comes from. But nonetheless, I think that a return to Canada would be a positive thing overall.
Absolutely. And I was reading just recently how long the wait is to get passports. So it makes sense that NASCAR is putting this out here and letting not just the drivers know, but any fans that might want to go up to Montreal or Canada, wherever the race is going to be able to get their passports in order as well. Obviously, some of this is to attract an international audience as well. So I am all for it. I know the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series has raced in Canada before. We've raced down in Mexico before. We've gone over to Japan and raced. So, yeah, this is kind of cool that we're back to talking about doing that again. And I think it'll be a good thing for the sport. So I'm all for it. Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely view it as a positive. You mentioned the races we've seen. I think back to specifically Canadian Tire Park with the truck, the final turn there coming down onto the front stretch to the checkered flag always provided some great action. I think of Chase Elliott, I believe, made a move there that was what most consider his one and only, well, maybe not anymore, outright wrecking somebody. It used to be his only time, I should say. The John Hunter Nemechek and Cole Custer, I mean, the two of them, a third place, ended up winning that because they both went into the wall and stayed in the gas and fought along the wall. I don't remember who won that race. But then we also had the tackle afterwards. Montreal, though, was another good one. I think back to that one, I think we got to see the double burnout. Robbie Gordon got penalized for something and didn't feel he should have and did a burnout alongside the winner in that one. I thought that was great. So I think it is a really good thing. The question becomes, A, because obviously all the ones we talked about, even if it is a street course, which I think we need to avoid for now, but they're all road courses up there. And the question then becomes of if you pull an oval or track for another road course, do we have too many road courses? As Mike said, with anything, you don't want to go in the direction of having too many, even of a good thing. Then you get into the Trans Am series where it's all road courses. So it'll be interesting to see where it comes from, as Andy mentioned, but I think going up there is a great thing.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up.
Kind of like what Jay said, we've had some really classic moments, not too deep into the past coming out of Canada. I will say you're right. Chase Elliott definitely did some wrecking of, I think it was Ty Dillon in that race, and there was definitely some hurt feelings, but he didn't do any time on the couch for that one versus this year. He got a little bit of couch time, well-deserved couch time, I might add, for an intentional wreck at Charlotte. So, yeah, you definitely can't say that's the only time Chase has wrecked somebody. But, yeah, it kind of highlights there's some classic racing that we've had up in Canada in the not-too-distant past, and I'd like to see it again in the future. We don't know a whole lot about the 2024 NASCAR schedule. We've got some rumors. Some tracks have kind of confirmed their dates that they're going to be coming back. Talladega has confirmed they're going to have their same spring and the fall races. Daytona, you know, the tentpole kind of races. But it's those really kind of in the middle fluctuating kind of races that we really don't know yet. We kind of assume the Chicago Street Race is coming back because they're on that contract. But there's a couple other big question marks that we're not sure yet. And I think the big question is going to be, if they do add a race in Canada, what could that potentially replace? That's the big question. There's not a whole lot of excess dates in the Cup Series schedule anymore. So you're looking at potentially taking away a date from a fairly well-established track and potentially moving it to Canada. Races that I would say are vulnerable are the Spring Bristol race. I think is probably the most vulnerable race on the entire schedule. Now, the rumor that I have heard, and this is only just rumor, is that the Spring Bristol race will be removed from the schedule, and that date will go to North Wilkesboro for a points race. Again, only a rumor. but now you have two races at Darlington. I understand they only just added that second race back at Darlington, but I think the spring Darlington race may be another one that's at risk. That's a potential one to go there. The early Kansas race, I believe, is also another at-risk kind of date. We don't know what the California replacement's going to be on the schedule since Auto Club Speedway is in, at best, a reconstruction process, if not completely removed from the schedule. But there's a couple things working against using that date in Canada. First and foremost is the weather. It's probably going to be too cold, too snowy during the time of year that that Auto Club date fits into the schedule. And the other thing is I really don't know that NASCAR would want to leave the Southern California market to go all the way up to Canada. So you can see there's a lot of speculation and a lot of moving pieces about what they could potentially do here and there in order to make that work. But we're probably not going to know anything for at least another month, maybe 2 months, until they start releasing the schedule for next season.
Okay, all good points. Andy.
Yeah, I don't really have any follow-up here on this one. I think it'll just be interesting to see what's announced and you know, how the schedule changes as a result of this potential ad. You know, so we'll just wait and see what ultimately comes out of it.
I know Joey Logano has been an advocate for not having repeat tracks on the schedule, so taking that Bristol Spring race might actually be a good one to fill in here. But we'll have to see. For all the, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons there to consider as well. I don't have a whole lot to add here as well. So, Jay, what's your follow-up?
Well, I'm a little confused, and I was trying to look back through what we had discussed prior. I really thought that it was official of no longer going to be the Bristol Spring Race, that the dirt was going to go away, and that North Wilkesboro. I really thought that was official, but I might be mistaken. Mike brought up a good point of the California date. What's that, Sharon?
Yeah, I said it makes sense to take the Bristol Spring Race off the schedule, thinking about Canada, but you're right. It's the North Wilkesboro race that they're talking about. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, like I said, I really thought that one was official, but the California date, the Auto Club, that one certainly would be an interesting. They may have to change the time frame, as Mike alluded to. What I can't believe, though, is Mike didn't say it, and Tommy's not here tonight. I'm sure both of you are in favor of taking both dates from Texas and going up there. So I don't know how that one got overlooked, but I'm with Joey Logano. I would like to see NASCAR go to 36 different races versus the double ups that we have. And I know there's certain ones that even if they're good races, Talladega, Daytona, if we would ever get to that, those are going to probably be the last ones that lose that second date. But I'm in favor of it. I really am. And there's plenty of options to fill that schedule then, as we don't have Iowa on the schedule. Chicagoland could possibly come back. I'll give Sharon a little bit of hope. You know, they're going out to Portland. Now, there again, I know we're talking about a road course, so I just don't want to see it either of become too many road courses. But I'm all in favor of seeing 36 different venues. But I don't have to pay the bills to hell and have a track open once or a NASCAR race once a year either and find other ways to fill it. So that's not my problem.
Okay. All right. We'll let that be that for that particular topic. Real quick, I do want to give a programming note here before we do our roundtable. This Thursday, we are doing another podcast, and the timing will be exactly the way it was last week when we did the podcast for those of us here that can make it. And I just wanted to remind everybody to watch for that podcast to come out sometime early on Thursday evening for our preview show for this week. So with that, let's go ahead and do our roundtable. And, Mike, I guess we'll start with you.
Sure, why not? It's Mike_O on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. if we're keeping the same timing on the podcast, I'm probably going to miss it, unfortunately, which is a shame because I really did want to go round and round with Andy here about Corey LaJoie potentially getting extended at Spire Motorsports. So we kind of poked at each other a little bit in the group chat while this has been going on. So maybe I can make it, but I wouldn't count on it for Thursday. I'll probably catch you sometime next week, but I should be able to at least watch the races this weekend, and I can talk to my good buddy Andy then.
Oh, okay. Andy.
Yeah, ZB14Fan on Twitter, and Thursday's also to be determined for me as well. It all just depends on work and what happens this week, but I'm looking forward to this weekend. It's my first time back to a NASCAR race, actually, since Mike and I went to Talladega over a year and a half ago, so hard to believe that. But, yeah, I'll be at Loudon, which is my home game. I'm only an hour from the racetrack, so looking forward to hopefully some good racing this weekend and hopefully being back on this show Thursday.
Okay. Jay?
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8, on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll see what we come up with on Thursday. But if not, we'll be sure to represent y'all if you aren't here.
Okay. And I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter, Fan for Racing Blog and Radio on Facebook, and our website, fanforracing.com. Andy, if you're going to be out at Loudon, I don't know how you feel about doing a maybe a live blog like we did with Brian, but something to think about. Let me know if you have an interest in that. also, we did have a guest on our show earlier tonight during our third half hour. We had Holly Clark. She's been racing in the SRL Prolate models and modifieds and doing quite well. She hasn't won her first race yet, but she's had an awful lot of seconds against some pretty heavy hitters in that series. And it was an interesting conversation with her tonight, and a name that you'll want to watch out for. She gave us a chance to kind of get to know who she is. So take a listen to that interview again during the third half hour. Also, we appreciate our listeners listening, whether it's a live broadcast or the podcast. We appreciate all of you. I know we have a lot of fun doing this show, and we hope you enjoy listening as much as we enjoy doing it. So we'll see if it can work out on Thursday. I know Jay and I will be there. I can check and see if maybe Brian's available and he can help us out with Hot Topics. But I'll be putting a notice out on the Fan for Racing radio thread on our Teams app as well. So watch for that because I need your thoughts about something that we are considering as well. So with that, I guess we're ready to call it a night. We'll be back Thursday, but as a podcast, and then Monday night again for the live broadcast. So with that, I guess we're ready to call it a night here on Fan for Racing Radio, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.